Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
So good evening, everybody. My name is Wayne Baker. I'm usually the quiet one here because Rick and Leslie jump in and talk so much that it's hard to get a word in edgewise sometimes, but I am in charge. They're all out of town. Rick, I'm sure, will be calling sometime before the hour's over. You know he will. But I have a very special guest tonight, one of my most favorite people in the whole wide world. And this person used to accuse me of being a brown noser because she was also my most favorite professor in my graduate school program at St. Ed's. Tonight with me, I've got Dr. Vagdevi Munier. She is a licensed clinical psychologist and also a associate professor?
Assistant professor.
Assistant at the University of St. Edward's in the Masters of Arts in Counseling program. So, Vagdevi, welcome. It is great
Thank
to
you,
be
Wayne.
Here with you.
Thank
Look,
you.
He's already calling.
Wait a minute. Let me get my words in first.
That's right. So I asked Vagdevi to come and chat with us tonight because of her depth of knowledge and experience in working with couples. And so, Vagdevi, I know, obviously I've known you for a while, but tell me about how you got started in couples therapy. How did you do that? What happened?
Well, I started probably way back in the early 80s working with couples. And I'll tell you, it was in India where I first started doing this, and it really was out of necessity. Every time I was seeing a family, I would eventually end up with the two parents or one of the couples. Even if there was an older son who was married, I would eventually end up doing some kind of couple work. And when I came to the United States to study, I got my master's in developmental psychology and then decided to work with children. And when I was working with children in a residential treatment center and working with foster families, adoptive families, same thing. I would find myself very often working with the couples involved and trying to help them have a strong, loving relationship, because there was a really big trickle-down effect, a really big impact on the whole family from how well the two people in charge of the family were doing. Mm.
So you saw that back then and pretty consistently that it's it comes back to mom and dad.
Isn't that your experience?
Oh,
I know
yeah.
you do a lot of couples work too. Yeah,
it really is.
And you know, unfortunately though, I don't think I didn't get trained very well in my master's program or my doctoral program on how to do couples work.
I got trained really, really well. See, and I don't even have to say that anymore because she's already given me my A.
That's right.
The several A's that I had
know,
with
cut
classes.
It out.
Okay, give me a break. I'll tone it down now.
But yeah, so I mean, I really began to develop a passion for couples work because I felt like that was the basic unit of the family, is the couple. And when the couple is able to have a really strong relationship, they become better parents. They become better community icons, you know, better role models for other people. And people who are in distressed or troubled relationships really can't think beyond the relationship. The relationship that's troubled ends up taking up all your time.
Yeah, we see that all the time with the affair recovery stuff that we do. And I know you do a lot of that too.
I do.
Growing numbers of it.
Yes.
Yeah, so You are a Gottman certified therapist and a workshop leader. What does that mean?
So this is great. I get to do a plug, right?
Yeah,
right in the first
on,
5 minutes
it.
Of the show.
That's right.
But Gottman, John Gottman, is a researcher who has an institute in Seattle, Washington, and he's been doing research for about 30, 35 years on what makes marriages succeed or fail. And even if I say so myself, I think he is the best researcher that we have right now, really the person with the most wisdom. And it's not just wisdom that he sort of made up, you know, it's wisdom that really comes out of having watched 3,000-4,000 couples, watched really good ones and watched ones that were not doing so well. And so John Gottman then began to develop a training program for therapists to help them bring this research wisdom that he gathered into their work. And you go through this training program. It takes about a year, year and a half. There are 4 or 5 different levels of it. And I went through that, and I also went through an additional certification level, which was to get certified as a workshop leader. And, you know, I'm going to shamelessly plug this throughout
Come
the
on.
Show.
Plug
so
it.
I am doing John Gottman's Art and Science of Love weekend workshop for couples.
That's awesome.
Coming up in July for the first time in Texas and the first time in Austin, July 28th and 29th. And the workshop's going to be at St. Edward's University. For those who are interested in finding out more, the website is txcouplesworkshops.com. Check us out.
So what were the dates again?
July 28th and 29th.
I'm writing that down. Okay. So tell me about Gottman. You know, I'm familiar with a little bit of his work too, and we kind of believe around here that couples therapy would not be what it is today without him.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of considered him, I don't know if this is right or not, just the Sigmund Freud of couples therapy, where other people have kind of stemmed off from him and used his research. But do you see him that way? I mean,
he definitely is a pioneer in couples work. I wouldn't call him Sigmund Freud.
Okay, maybe, I know.
Because
maybe
I
that wasn't good.
Personally, I'm not a big fan of Freud.
Yeah,
but,
me either.
So, you know, I wouldn't want to insult poor Gottman. But he definitely is a pioneer. And I think the reason he's a pioneer is because before him, you know, when he started doing his research in the 1970s, there were probably a half a dozen research studies on how to predict divorce. Before that, people weren't even trying to predict divorce. Even these half a dozen studies that were trying to predict divorce would ask the people in the marriage or in the relationship, do you think you're going to make it? And then they would predict divorce based on that. Or they would predict divorce based on, there was one study that tried to predict divorce based on how people dressed, whether you were sharply dressed or, you know, rattly dressed. Yes. And it wasn't very useful. Didn't really help us understand what exactly helps put a marriage together and keep it together. And what is it that begins to take it down that slippery slope? And he did it. He did it with incredible research where he would actually have people come to Seattle to his love lab. That's what he called it. It was a little apartment lab, and they would come and they'd get hooked up and to monitors, to you know, medical equipment that monitored their blood pressure, their heart rate. They would wander about the apartment, you know, spend a whole weekend there, kind of doing their own thing. But periodically, he would have them have a discussion or an argument, and then he would test all these different physiological measures, as well as asking them, you know, what they think about the relationship and asking them something about their background. So he actually was the first person to put all that together, to put together what's happening in someone's body, along with what are they saying about their satisfaction or what they're thinking about their partner, and really put it together in a beautiful way to come up with a very elegant model of what he calls a sound relationship.
Yeah. So it sounds like the data that he's got to back it up is probably the most compelling, the thing that probably interested you the most. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is sort of a philosophical point of mine that, you know, I might come back to later on, but I think it's really important for us in the mental health field to do better than we've been doing with marital therapy. We really have a rotten track record. Yeah. We have not done very well. In fact, there was a study that showed that if you saw a marital therapist, your chances of getting a divorce was slightly higher. Hello, what are we
That's
doing then? That's not good for our business. And people in relationships are very distressed and very eager to have some way of working on their relationships. And so I think philosophically speaking, we need to have a good, solid understanding of relationships. A lot of people who do marital therapy before Gottman were also doing marital therapy based on their ideas, their personal ideas about what feels good in a good relationship. And he was the first person to say, you know, I'm not a relationship expert. If you looked at my own relationships, you might see that I'm very human and I make a lot of mistakes. But I can tell you from this 30 years of research, from watching couples, what exactly helps them stay together and what helps them, you know, move towards the decline. So I think that's really a different way to look at it.
Yeah, that's very good. Okay, so I think we're up against a break. Bogdavian, I would love to hear from you. Please give us a call if you have questions or comments about anything you've heard so far or what you may hear later. The number here at the station is 365-9930. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hope. Hope for the brokenhearted. Hope for those who have made a mistake. Hope for those impacted by betrayal. Hope for couples who feel no hope. The Affair Recovery Center is designed to offer hope, direction, and help for couples and individuals whose lives have been ripped by infidelity. There is hope at the Affair Recovery Center. We can all personally testify to what God can do by what we have personally experienced. Let us help. We are a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We can be reached at affairrecovery.com, or you can call toll-free at 888-527-2367. That's 888-527-2367.
So welcome back, and I think we have a caller. Bob, are you there? Hello, Bob.
Hello. Yes.
Yeah,
hi,
you have
Bob.
A question?
Oh yeah. Am I on the radio?
You are.
Oh okay. Well, I have a very sad situation, but it's all my fault, basically. For 12 of my 13-year marriage, I was involved with sexual addiction. Everything from internet pornography to chatting with women to actually meeting with women on different occasions and being faithful sexually. And we have three little children. And I told my wife 3 years ago, found out about the pornography and said, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. I said I'd stop. I did. Never got help. Got pulled right back into it. And recently, about 4 months ago, she found it again and said I'm done. And I knew that I had to tell her everything, and she didn't know about the other part, the unfaithfulness. And so I went ahead and told her, because God said you're not going to be healed if you don't be completely 100% honest. And that was pretty much it. And I couldn't talk to her much after that, and within a month she filed divorce. So that was pretty much what happened. Is where it stands now, it's almost gone more into it's almost become enemy level for her. Comments like, you know, you're never going to get better, you're never going to be able to love, you're going to abandon us, my marriage was a lie, just going from, you know, care to nothing. And she'd fallen out of love with me years ago, I know that. So it's a real bad position right now, and she refuses to go to any counseling for myself, us, or for the kids, and just wants the divorce.
Mm. I'm sorry to hear that, Bob.
Me too. Yeah.
So, did you have a question for us?
Well, I guess my question is, what can you do if your wife doesn't want to go to counseling? What can be done? Is there anything? What?
My thoughts on. You know, if your wife doesn't want to go to counseling together, Bob, the main thing that you can do is do what you need to do for you at this point, I would think.
Yeah.
Like Davey?
Yeah, well, I have a couple of thoughts I want to share with you. You know, the first thing, Bob, is I would say take a deep breath and slow things down, because you have three kids. And even if you're not married to each other, you're co-parenting. And you will be the co-parents of these kids for the next how long? You know, how old are your children?
All in the age of 10.
Yeah, so a long time to come. You and your wife are going to have to work some things out. The research shows that the worst thing that we can do to children is to have a hostile relationship.
Absolutely.
Actually, it doesn't really affect the children nearly as much as whether their parents are married or not. Kids really don't care, believe it or not, whether their parents are married, but they do care about their parents having a loving relationship. So I would say focus on that. And it may take a while. She clearly is in shock, which is to be expected. It sounds like when you told her everything, that might have been a lot more than she could handle. So I would say you need a lot of compassion for her. And slow it down and really see this as a long-term project. You might have to wait a year or even two before she's willing to work with you, but it'll be worth it because you have kids that you're going to have to be good parents for.
I agree. I know that, you know, what I've done in my marriage hasn't just been that. It's been, you know, pridefulness and self-control and manipulation, and I just put a yoke on her that was too heavy. And now she's like, I don't want it anymore, and I don't want this marriage anymore. And I can understand. I don't blame her one bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bob, when was full disclosure to everything?
About 4 months ago.
4 months ago? Okay.
Yeah, 4 months ago. And, it's been limited talk, and there's just she has a tremendous amount of anger, and I understand. I'd be very, very angry, too. We're both Christians, both going to church, so that's good. And both love the Lord. I'm realizing that, like your co-host just said, it is, I think, a long-term project, and I can't put any timetable on it.
Right.
And I wouldn't. The other thing I would suggest, if she's open to this idea, is to say, you can have a divorce anytime, so what's the rush? You know, let's wait until both of us are beyond this initial period of shock and trauma, and see if 6 months from now we still feel this way or you still feel this way. Because I think one of the best times really to make the decision about whether to leave somebody that you're in a committed relationship with is when you feel like friends, when you feel good about each other. The worst time to leave is when you're trying to, you know, escape something or get back at somebody or run away. I think those are times when we're really not thinking clearly.
Right.
So if she's open to it, I think a good suggestion might be to say, I'm really going to respect whatever you want to do, but will you hear me out and let this slow this down a little, you know, wait out a little bit longer, see how you feel 6 months from now.
Yeah, I kind of did that about a month and a half ago, and she just said, nope, I want the divorce, and that was it. And if she said, I don't want to hear any books from you, I don't want to talk to any counseling, it's very much, I've made up my mind, that's it. So my question is, we've got 3 more months to our divorce is final, when do I bring it up again?
So when you say you have 3 months to divorce being final, has she already filed the paperwork?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she filed 3 months ago.
Okay.
She filed a month after she found out.
Okay. Have the two of you been through any mediation?
We're going to go, we want to go through mediation just because it's at least expensive than lawyers, but that's truly for only, in her mind, to split the assets and figure out, you know, the parenting arrangements and that.
Well,
I'd love
go ahead.
Oh, I'd love to go to a, you know, a Christian family therapist to, you know, kind of talk about this, but she just won't have anything to do with that. She just wants to divide yet, and she just emailed me and said this Thursday we're having a meeting to start talking about doing that.
So, Bob, what kind of recovery work are you doing for you?
I'm going to a Christian therapist who specializes in sexual recovery. Also involved with a recovery group, 12-step Christian-based group, and have accountability through that, through both sources, and working through, you know, my issues, everything from, you know, my issues, you know, go beyond just sexual addiction. It's also the needing the validation from women, wanting to have a relationship, to have some kind of, you know, feel identity. So I know I need to, my relationship with God is paramount to become, you know, him become more, have more validity in me, and to feel like, you know, I don't need a relationship to feel whole. I think that's part of it. But you have 3 kids and everything else, it just makes things a lot more difficult because you want to sleep with them and wake up with them. And what's happening now is I realize I've, you know, walked away from my kids in some ways as far as parenting, and now I'm seeing the errors in my ways. And ironically, now I want to work on the things my wife has always wanted me to work on with the kids and be there for dinner, and now she won't let me. So that's the irony of it all.
It is ironic, isn't it? And I think, you know, the best thing you can do is speak your truth and be authentic at this meeting on Thursday. You know, you don't have to be where she is. And you can certainly go into that meeting with an open mind and with an attitude of, I know you don't want to hear this right now, but right now is when I really feel awake to my responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I want the opportunity to work on them and see what you can do with that. I think the challenge for you is that in the past, it sounds like you have used manipulation to get your way.
Yep.
And
yep.
So she's not going to respond very well to anything that looks like that.
Now, what do you mean awake to my responsibilities? What do you... What is that?
Well, it sounds like this is really hitting home for you. I can hear the emotions in your voice as you talk about it. So that's really an awakening, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's and what I've done to her, too, is becoming more and more real, the pain that I've brought in her life.
Yeah.
And the breaking the covenant and just the horror that I've brought to her life, that she was an innocent victim. I'm realizing that more every day.
Right.
And I, you know, I'm taking the responsibility that she can divorce me, and I don't blame her for doing that. But we've got kids at stake, and there's
exactly.
huge issues with that when you do divorce, and, you know, implications on their life too.
You can't force her to do what you want her to do, but what you can do is really take a loving stand about what you see as important.
Right. Right.
And the more you can do that, the more you will really send a message of courage and awareness.
Right, right. When she says something like last week, she said, you know, she said to me, she said, you're doing all the right things now, but when the divorce is final, you're going to abandon us. I was so shocked, I didn't really even, she just went on to something else real quick, and I didn't even respond to that. Is that something I need to respond to? Because she has a fear that I'm going to abandon the family.
Well, you know, it's a little hard in a situation like a radio show to kind of go into individual responses to her because I don't know her. And I feel hesitant to tell you whether that's right or wrong or what you should do, because it really would help to know both of you to understand what the dynamics are. It sounds like she's saying, I don't trust you. And it sounds like you understand that.
Yeah.
You understand how she could have lost trust.
Oh, absolutely.
And so you might need to be patient with her saying that.
Yeah. And I'm not, I know I can't argue the point to say, you know, look, you know, 3 months, I'm already better. You know, that's just ridiculous. And I don't expect to earn her trust in 3 months.
Exactly.
But it's, I know it's going to take years to earn her trust back. And somebody had said to me, the best thing I can do right now is to show her that I love her, is to love our kids.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like good advice to me.
Yeah. I would say love your kids and do what you need to do for your own recovery. Regardless of what happens to the marriage, you need to own your recovery for you and for nobody else.
Yeah, I'm realizing that in the beginning, I'll admit, I was doing the recovery. I didn't think I was, but there was a big motivation to get my marriage back. And I'm realizing now that whether she stays or goes, what's paramount in my life and for my kids' life is my recovery, because that's the man that I want to be for them, and the father I want to be them is a healthy and whole man.
Good for you.
That's good. Well, Bob,
thanks, guys.
Sure, we really appreciate you calling.
Bullet in something like this, and it just isn't there.
Yeah. We really appreciate your call.
All right. Have
Take
a good
care.
Evening.
You too.
Thanks. Well, I think we're up against another break soon, but I want to let you guys know, Bob, if you're still listening as well, we have an emergency marriage seminar coming up this next weekend. It's a fast-paced workshop. I kind of call it being pulled through a knothole at times, but it's designed for couples whose relationships have been battered by infidelity or sexual addiction. And this weekend is to help you put your marriage back on track by helping you reestablish intimacy in the relationship, helping you work through the pain of betrayal and find healing and hope and forgiveness. And believe it or not, your marriage can actually emerge stronger than ever before. So I encourage any of you that may need this or know somebody, go to our website at affairrecovery.com, click on EMS. There'll be more information and a registration form there. Or you can call our office at 346-9299 and talk to our office manager, and she'll be happy to help you. So, again, we're up against a break, and you can give Vogdavia and I a call at 365-9930.
Listen to what others are having to say about the Emergency Marital Seminar offered by the Affair Recovery Center.
This EMS weekend was very meaningful for me, and I feel it moved us along in such a positive way. I truly see success and forgiveness in the future.
Thank you so much. I came here for my wife, but I left with my life.
It was incredible to see God intervene in our marriage in such a visible way. Miraculous doesn't even begin to describe it.
You made this so easy for us to follow and understand, so comfortable.
As you can tell from past participants, the Emergency Marital Seminar has had a profound impact on the couples who have attended. If your marriage is at a point of crisis, we would like to invite you to come join us March 30th, 31st, and April 1st to be a part of this life-changing event. We can be reached at area code 512-346-9299, or you can go to our website at affairrecovery.com.
Hi, this is Richard Curley, hoping I can catch a ride home today. Homeward Bound at 4 on the Word, 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
So welcome back to Fair Recovery Radio, where tonight I'm Wayne Baker, and I'm here with Dr. Vogdavia Munier. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call at 365-9930. And so, Vogdavia, I just want to tell you again, this is really fun to do this with you tonight.
Fun for me, too. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. So we were before the last call, we were talking about John Gottman and his contribution to marital therapy, and where does his method differ or offer something different than other methods of marital therapy?
One of the biggest differences between his method and other people is that his entire model and the way you work with couples using the Gottman method is very practical. And it is really written for people who aren't psychologists, who aren't mental health professionals, who don't think in those foo-foo, you know, touchy-feely ways. Mm-hmm. When I use the Gottman method with my couples, more men tell me that they love it and they stick around for therapy, which is actually unusual because very often when a couple comes in to see me, the woman will be really excited about doing therapy and will also feel more comfortable talking about her feelings, talking about the relationship. And the man will be sitting there saying, I don't know what to say. Or, you know, the two of you are having a great conversation. I'm sitting over here by myself, which is not the experience that they have when I talk about Gottman's research and I talk about how it applies to relationships. Because Gottman really breaks it down into practical, everyday kinds of skills. He says, what do you need to be doing on a moment-by-moment basis that's going to help build a relationship? You know, most other people who wrote about relationships didn't have that kind of information.
So how does a couple build this lasting relationship? You know, how do they break it down day by day to make it 40, 50, 60 years of marriage?
Well, Gottman's model has 7 levels. The levels divide into the first 3 levels at the bottom that he calls the basement of the house. It actually looks like a house because he calls it the sound relationship house. So the bottom 3 levels are the marital friendship. And what he says is that you can't really work on the higher kinds of conflict issues or the, you know, more difficult issues in a marriage until you have a really strong marital friendship. Well, what's a good friendship look like? A good friendship is one where you really know each other and you really have sort of a daily awareness of what this other person's life is like. Friendship is one where you admire the other person and you have a lot of fondness for them and you let them know, you know. Think about your best friend and how excited you are when this person calls or when they want to go out with you. Bringing that into your marital friendship, marital relationship is going to really help build that friendship. The other thing he says about a marital friendship, which is absolutely key in his model, is what he calls an emotional bid, or just a bid and a turn. A bid is any unit of interaction where your partner or spouse is trying to interact with you, is trying to get your attention, or is trying to share something with you. It could be as simple as, you know, looking at the newspaper and saying, oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's a kind of invitation. And if the other person says, what are you reading? Then that's a way of turning towards the bid. Mm-hmm. But if your spouse says, oh, I didn't know about this, and the other person, the other partner just ignores it or says, oh, leave me alone, you know, don't talk to me about what's in the newspaper, read your own newspaper, then that would be a way of either turning away or turning against. And both of those really kind of kill the relationship fabric. He calls it the emotional bank account. The more times that the two of you bid each other and actually turn towards each other, respond to each other in a very friendly, loving way, the more you build an emotional bank account. And it turns out this emotional bank account is incredibly important in determining how often you fight. And when you fight, whether those fights end up in a good place or a bad place. And also, after a fight, whether you're able to repair it. All of those are determined by how good your emotional bank account are. So I'll just stop there, but those are the most important elements, I think, okay, of his model.
Well, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about the difference in, I guess, a Hollywood version of love what we think romantic view of love and marriage is and a more real or authentic view of love. Some of our couples work that we've done, you know, we grow up with this notion that it's hot and heavy romance and passionate and you never fall out of love. So mm-hmm. How does that all tie in with, I guess, Gottman and his work and what you see in your office?
Well, I think the love and the passion and the kind of thrill we see in the Hollywood movies is what we all crave, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But it's really like a high. It's the kind of high that you can have at the beginning of a relationship, at the beginning of a new relationship. There's a thrill to it. There's a mystery to it. There's a lot of passion that comes from finding something out about this new person. But like any high, you can't be on a high forever. And it turns out when you're on the high, you really don't see this person for who they are. You know, you see your version, your fantasized version of this person. And it actually makes good sense to give up that version of love at some point.
To explain that a little bit better, that it makes good sense. I think I agree with you, but I want to hear what you say.
Well, you know, I think it makes good sense because you really can't be on a high while you're washing diapers and getting your spouse to change the baby's diapers or to help you out or, you know,
vacuuming floors and washing dishes and mowing the lawn and all that stuff. Right?
So if you maintain this expectation that you will have the same Hollywood love and you're trying to live on a daily basis with this person, you can really feel a lot of conflict. You can feel a lot of inner split between who they are and what it's like to live with them and what you thought love was going to be like. So that's why I say it makes good sense to give that up so that you can actually get on with the business of learning how to live with this person.
Growing up and maturing.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I tell people that my husband and I've been married 20 years. I say my husband and I have been through 3 different marriages.
Really?
And I didn't know that at the beginning. And when I when we kind of went past that first marriage that we had, I really grieved it because he wasn't, you know, remembering to bring me flowers every week. And he was working really hard. I was working really hard. And so we weren't having nearly as many dates. And then, of course, the first baby comes and that usually has a huge impact on marital satisfaction. And we certainly had that. And I really grieve that. And I think in some ways it was unfortunate that I didn't know that we were going to have a different kind of marriage later, because I think I also got really angry and said, oh, what's going on here? We, you know, that's usually the point at which a lot of people decide to get divorced. It's about that,
right?
What, 7-year itch, mm-hmm. Between 5 to 7 years is when people really start to say, oh, I'm not happy here. This is not working out for me. And they're expecting this very thrilling ride, and it's not happening. The good news is if you hang around, the next ride may be slow, but it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more meaningful. And, you know, like I said, we've been through 3 marriages because I think there are so many different stages you go through. And every stage, if you're willing to hang in there for it, offers something much better.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, I think we're up against a break again. I just want to remind you to give us a call at 365-9930, and we'll be back with you in just a few minutes.
Do you believe in modern day miracles? I do, because daily I witness them as couples who are torn asunder by infidelity are reconciled. Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, founder of the Affair Recovery Center. Please join us each Sunday evening from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time at Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God, where we witness on an ongoing basis the miracles of God. We have seen and witnessed that there is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
This is Kay Arthur. Have you come to the end of self, my friend? Have you seen your total unworthiness, your impotence to be what you ought to be? Do you realize that Jesus, God's Son, became a man just so he might die for your sins as a substitute because the payment for sin is death? Do you believe that Jesus was made sin for you so that you, a helpless, hopeless enemy of God, might have His righteousness and His life? Believe in your heart that God has raised Jesus from the dead. Confess Jesus Christ as your Savior and your Lord, and you will be saved. Scripture says whoever believes in him will not be disappointed, for whoever will call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. If you'd like to begin a relationship with Jesus Christ, someone is waiting to talk to you now at 888-NEED-HIM. That's 888-NEED-HIM.
If someone asks what station you listen to today, tell them the Word 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
So welcome back to A Fair Recovery Radio. This is Wayne Baker, and I'm here with Dr. Vogdavian Munier. If you have any questions for us or comments, we would love to hear from you. And the number here is 365-9930. So, Vogdavi, we were just talking on the break about how fast this hour has gone. And we haven't touched on half of what you and I talked about. So,
you'll just have to have me back, Wayne.
I will. Rick, stay gone another week. We've got next Sunday night covered. If you're listening, So talk to me a little bit about the differences, the benefits for men in marriage versus women in marriage. That probably was a bad question. But
No. You know what? A lot of people ask that question exactly that way, because there was a lot of popular hype at one point that somehow men benefited from marriage, but women didn't. That, in fact, women were miserable in marriages because they had to sort of, they felt more tied down and they had to, you know, not be free spirits, and that when they were divorced or separated, that they actually had a better time. Well, the research now that's coming in really shows that marriage benefits both men and women. And that for men, some of the benefits include a longer life, that they, don't quote me on this, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was something like 10 extra years.
Wow.
Get added to your lifespan.
Amy, if you're listening, we're staying married.
Yeah. Men tend to be more productive, do better in their careers. They tend to drink less. They tend to have less health problems like blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease. So physiologically, they tend to do better. They have much better medical histories. They do better emotionally. They tend to be more productive in society, because here's a really interesting side note. One of the authors that I was reading, this is from the book by Stephanie Kuntz called A Marriage, A History. And it's a fantastic book. And she talks in there about how one of the side benefits about marriage for men is that they tend to be more involved in church and more involved in community organizations. Mm. So they actually tend to give back more to society if they're in a marriage.
And that makes sense.
Does, doesn't it?
If you think about our own practices.
That's right. I mean, all the times that I've had to drag my husband to church with me. So for all you men who go kicking and screaming to church, remember, it really helps. It helps that you're married. And for women, too, it's a wonderful benefit to being married. Same kinds of benefits physiologically, medically. Women tend to be less depressed. Women tend to have, I don't know if they have the same benefit in terms of longevity. I think they have a little bit, not as much as men, but they certainly have all the positive medical benefits and emotional benefits.
So why do you, if with all the benefits, why do you, or do you have, and this is a crazy question that I'm about to ask you probably,
oh,
but
please,
why
go for it.
Why do you think divorce rate in this country is north of 50% or somewhere around there?
You know, I think the divorce rate in this country and other westernized countries is so high because people really get misled by Hollywood, by movies. They're not really trained or socialized in school, in their families, to think of relationships as hard, to think of relationships needing work, and to think of relationships as having ups and downs. You know, the situation with Bob who called us, the thing that's really sad is that he actually has something going on with him that's very profound. And it may be that right now he's really coming through it. We don't know, but it may be that this is the turning point in his life and his wife is getting ready to leave him. And if he had cancer, would she do that? And I think in many westernized societies, men and women don't stick around and work on hard stuff. They were raised to believe that there is one right person for everyone, and that when you're with the right person, that there will be no trouble. And that's actually not true. I think when you're with the right person, you actually work harder, you know, because you come face to face with all of your own...
Your own stuff,
your own blind spots, your own warts, and, you know...
Yeah, so do you see any relationship between divorce and infidelity?
Absolutely. The interesting thing, most people think that divorce is caused by infidelity, and it's not true.
Right, yeah, we see
that. When you look at the research, the people who come for divorce court or mediation tend to report infidelity as somewhere in the 20%. Percentile. So it's very low.
Irreconcilable differences, something like
either that or they say something like growing apart, getting very distant from each other. Now, infidelity can cause that. The relationship I see between divorce and infidelity is that I think it's the same problem on two sides of the coin, which is this problem of not being able to do intimacy, not being able to have authentic, intimate relationships. When we go for the Hollywood-style relationship, we really are going for something that feels like a roller coaster ride, that's going to be great, it's going to be lots of fun, it's a blast, and it's over soon. Right?
Yeah.
And
it's got to get over sooner. You're going to get sick.
Exactly. So we start anticipating this crash, or we go into these relationships thinking, I'll be in it as long as it's fun. And we tend to actually avoid becoming authentically intimate with our partners. And when we stop, or when we don't move in the direction of authentic intimacy, of course, what's going to happen is I'm going to get bored after a while. And the next thrilling ride that shows up, you know, maybe that colleague that they just hired down the hall at my work, or this new person that I met at church, or, you know, just this person I met at a Starbucks, begins to look very interesting and exciting. Because again, it's a superficial kind of intimacy that feeds us for a moment, but doesn't actually satisfy us for a long time.
Yeah, that's good. So any ideas on how to affair-proof your marriage?
Couple of thoughts. You know, I think the best thing you can do to affair-proof your marriage is to make sure that you really stay intimately connected with your partner. And when I say intimately connected, I don't mean sitting on the couch and cuddling and, you know, spending a lot of time staring into each other's eyes. I think intimacy comes from really revealing who you are.
Mm-hmm. Being fully known,
being yourself, and allowing the other person to be themselves in the relationship. Sometimes that's even harder than being yourself, you know, really allowing the other person to be who they are.
Well, and that can create some short-term instability there as you're both kind of bouncing off on each other of who you really are, you know, the things you struggle with, the things you dream about, the things you hope for.
Again, I think that's that, you know, the road to intimacy is not like a roller coaster ride. You know, it's a lot harder. It's more like a journey through a forest. There'll be ups and downs and dark spots and light spots. And you have to know that at the end of that journey, what you'll have will feel so satisfying and so wonderful, so deeply satisfying, that anybody that comes into your environment that looks exciting isn't going to be worth it. It's just going to not feel like something worth going after.
Even when, and I believe this, and I think you do too, even when there's infidelity on that journey, on that road or that path through the forest, when you stick it out, and we see it time and time again, where you really can have the marriage you dreamed of or
Absolutely.
You hoped for, if you stick it out, get some help.
So can I tell you one thing that you sort of brought up another philosophical issue for me?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm going to wax philosophical here. I think every marriage has a crisis.
Yeah.
A marriage without a crisis is really two people kind of, you know, walking side by side, not really connecting with each other. There are some people who call it an entanglement, and I think that's really true. If you don't have a crisis, then all you have is a kind of entanglement. You know, you share your finances and your kids and whatever else. Every marriage has a crisis. It's not necessary that the crisis that you have has to be infidelity or has to be gambling or has to be something else. But just understand that that's part of the work. In fact, infidelity is often the place where most couples, if they're willing to do the work, they really come face to face with what was missing in the relationship.
Right.
What each of them was doing or not doing in the relationship to make it not work.
Yeah.
And if they're willing to take a look at that, and they're willing to really pledge their commitment to each other from ground zero at that point, they can build a relationship that's incredibly strong. People get so caught up in blaming each other and saying, how could you do this to me? Instead of saying, gosh, you know, and I'm not saying it's easy to turn around and say, well, you cheated on me and, you know, isn't that nice? But certainly if you can keep an awareness that whatever crisis your marriage has is actually a wonderful opportunity to figure out what's not working.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, we've just got like a minute left or so, and I want to give you the opportunity to plug your seminar.
Oh, thank you. Sure. Yes. So I am a Gottman certified therapist and workshop leader. We talked about this a little while earlier. And as part of that, John Gottman and his wife, Julie Gottman, do a weekend workshop for couples up in Seattle. And they have now allowed their trained workshop leaders to bring that same weekend workshop to different parts of the country. And so we're really pleased to be able to offer the first Texas weekend workshop for couples called The Art and Science of Love. It's based on John Gottman's work. And the workshop will be on July 28th and 29th, Saturday and Sunday. To get more information, you can visit our website at txcouplesworkshops.com.
Great, thanks. Well, thank you, Vagdevi, for joining me tonight. This has really been a treat for me, and I know I speak for Rick and John and Leslie as well, that we love the work you do.
Thank you. Same here.
Well, we wish you great success with this weekend coming up. Again, guys, those dates are July 28th and 29th. Thank you, listeners and callers, for being with us.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?